clear that he's supposed to be here.
Okay. Malcolm Gladwell is going to be joining us now. He's the author of Blink and The Tipping Point. He joins us from our Air America studios over on 3 Park Avenue to discuss his latest article in The New Yorker, The Moral Hazard Myth, The Bad Idea Behind Our Failed Healthcare System. Welcome to the show, Malcolm.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you're at over at 3 Park Avenue.
Yeah, I went to the wrong studio.
Okay, what did you decide to do that in a blink?
No, I didn't. No, it's proof that, you know, we're not nearly as smart as we think we are over the New Yorker.
Yeah, well, Malcolm Gladwell, of course, is the author of two number one New York Times best-selling list, bestsellers. I don't know how many people have done that. That's pretty amazing.
Al?
Okay. I'm joking.
Okay, you know, he might have gone to the wrong studio, but I like his sense of humor.
Okay, listen. Let's talk about this, because this is a topic that I've been thinking about a lot, and it's about universal health care.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you opened on teeth.
Yes.
Talk about teeth.
Well, the teeth, my article was occasioned by this book that's just come out called Uninsured in America, and which is a series of kind of interviews with people who are uninsured throughout the country to give you a sense of who they are and what their issues are. And the number one thing people complain about who don't have health insurance is their teeth. And what the authors argue is that bad teeth have become a kind of class marker or a caste marker in America. That in the way that race functioned 50 years ago as the thing that singled you out for being second class, poor, you know, badly educated, subject of discrimination, presumed to be dumb, all those kinds of things that racism implied, teeth have now surfaced in the same way, that the small fraction of Americans, well, not so small, but the fraction of Americans who can't afford health insurance, and I can't afford certainly to go to a dentist, can be singled out now because of the fact they have what the rest of us don't have, which are these terrible teeth. And people are acutely aware of this, and it has served as an incredible impediment for people.
And Malcolm, let's just sort of explain the cycle. When you can't afford dental care. And I think you do it quite well in the article.
Mm-hmm.
This is the New Yorker article that we would recommend to everyone. It's interesting.
I wanted him just to explain.
Oh, the teeth.
Right.
What happens to your teeth?
I mean, it isn't just appearance.
Oh, sure. I mean, it becomes, well, you know, as people's teeth decay, it sort of spirals and leads to all kinds of much more serious health problems. You know, it becomes very difficult to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, which is something that is a real problem for people who are, say, diabetic, for instance, which is a...
It also, you can't get a decent job. You can't get a job that would, you know, it leads to all these other problems.
No one will give you a job where you have to deal with the public, for instance.
You don't want a receptionist with
you don't
bad
want
teeth.
A receptionist with bad teeth. You stick people with bad teeth in the back room in the worst kind of job. Or the pain of tooth decay is so overwhelming that it tends to exacerbate problems with alcohol because people start to self-medicate with alcohol because they can't afford painkillers. And it just sort of, it's the beginning of a kind of spiral that is one more thing that sends people who are, or keeps people who are at the bottom at the bottom.
And this is very real. I was in Duluth a couple months ago, and I was talking to some activists there and someone who deals with the people who don't have insurance, and this was exactly what she brought up.
Yeah.
Which was someone who had lost their insurance and now lost a tooth, and it's hard to get a job.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's broaden this to the whole point of universal healthcare,
mm-hmm.
and why we don't have it in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And what the theories are that kind of keep us from getting it.
Yeah. Because the point of the piece was, in asking this question, why don't we have what every other country in the industrialized world has? And very often we assume that, well, you know, it's because of, we just haven't gotten our act together politically, there's too many vested interests, but we explain it in kind of institutional or political terms. And what I wanted to do was to say, you know what, there's another really critical element here, and there is an ideological element here, that we don't have universal health care in this country because many of the senior people in this administration and people who control health policy in this country actively believe in a set of ideas which says that it's okay for people not to have health insurance, That's a really critical point. It's not that we don't have health universal health care because of some oversight. It's that in the piece I talk about, reading, and no one ever does this, and it's a very, very useful thing to do. Go and read the economic report of the president, the annual report that the White House puts out about their ideas about the economy. The 2004 edition has a long section on people who lack health insurance, right? Mm-hmm. In that section, they do not ever, ever, once, even entertain the possibility that the reason people don't have health insurance in this country is they can't afford it. The word poverty does not appear in that section. The entire point of this, and we're talking about thousands of words here, is that, well, people don't have health insurance because they choose not to have it. They make a rational calculation of whether that's an appropriate spending, way to spend their money, and they choose not to.
Right.
And they believe in an ideology that says, by the way, and this is the point of the piece, that insurance is on some level inefficient, because when you insure behavior, you encourage people to behave badly. So a lot of the senior people in the administration believe that health insurance, to fully insure someone, is inefficient because it means you go to the doctor way more than you need to. So they look at people without health insurance and they say, well, actually, those guys are the most efficient actors in the whole system, because they're only going to the doctor when they absolutely have to. The rest of us are wasting, medical resources.
Right. And what they're saying, this is called moral hazard.
Yeah, it's called moral hazard.
And it's a theory that if you're fully insured, well, you'll just go to the doctor anytime you feel like it. You'll get every test you can possibly get, and it's very wasteful.
Yeah,
and there's a germ of truth to it.
There is, because with other kinds of insurance, absolutely. We know from experience that if you give someone 100% coverage on their car, they will park a little more recklessly. If you give someone 100% fire insurance, they won't clear the brush away from their house. We know that moral hazard acts on insurance, but the question is, does it apply in the same way to health insurance? And the answer is no. Because health insurance is different. And because a lot of the things that people do, first of all, I don't know the difference. When I go to the doctor for some ailment, I don't know whether I'm going for a frivolous reason or whether I'm going for a real reason, right? Am I wasting the doctor's resources by going because I have a toothache or because I have a pain in my chest? I don't know until I go, right? That's right. The big, so when you look at, studies have been done on this. When you do things like raise deductibles, which is a way that the insurance industry uses to control moral hazard. Mm-hmm. People will go to the doctor less, but they don't go to the doctor more efficiently. They'll not go when they need to go, in addition to not going when they don't have to go.
Because presumably, when people go to the doctor when they feel like something might be wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
it prevents things from getting worse that
exactly.
cost more down the line mm-hmm. and cause them to be less productive as human beings and causes suffering and all that stuff. And the main thing, the main way to look at this, I believe, is to compare our society, which is the only post-industrial society not to have universal health care, with other industrial societies which do.
Mm-hmm.
And look at how much they spend and look at the outcomes and see where we end up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've done that.
Yeah, there's
virtually, a lot of people have done that.
Yeah, many people. There is virtually no indice of health where we're not in the bottom half. We are. I mean, you can go every single way you can measure the efficiency, the effectiveness of a healthcare system. We lose, mm-hmm. except for one, and that is how much we spend. This country spends twice as much or more than twice as much per capita on health care than any other industrialized country in the world. And yet we have shorter life expectancies, fewer doctors per capita. We go to the doctor less often. We go to the hospital less often. We have lower rates of immunization, on and on and on and on. We are, we're getting less for our dollar than any other country in the world. I mean, it's ridiculous that we settle for this. And on top of that, we don't even insure all of our people. We leave 44 million people without health insurance. So everyone else is doing way more with a lot less. And that, to me, is reason for us to start looking at our system and asking some tough questions.
And if you do polling of Americans,
mm-hmm.
Americans want universal health care and have for a long time.
Yeah, and in a certain way, we the great irony about this is that we have universal health care, single-payer health care. It's called Medicare.
Right.
And people who are on Medicare like their health insurance and their health care way better than anyone else in this country. They are the happiest people when it comes to medicine of all Americans. So we've got this example of universal single-payer.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy with it. And by the way, it's way more cost-efficient than any other. Medicare is the single most cost-efficient sector of the healthcare system today, right? It's way cheaper. Everyone's happy with it. We have it. We got a great experience with it.
But they're lucky because Medicare gets to deal with young, healthy people.
We're talking about Medicare.
I was joking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, see. I forget every now and again, Al, that you have that tendency.
Yeah. But it's easy to forget. Anyway, let's take a break, and when we come back, I'll explain to Malcolm what he's supposed to do on the show, which is laugh at things like
yes.
that. Okay, now we're talking to Malcolm Gladwell, the author of the Now where's Blink on the bestseller list?
Oh, I don't keep track of that kind of thing.
You don't?
No, it's somewhere up there.
Very different kind of fellow. We'll be back with Malcolm Gladwell here on the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. Welcome back to the Al Franken Show. I'm Al Franken. With me, of course.
I'm Catherine Lanford. We're continuing our conversation with Malcolm Gladwell. He is the author of New York Times bestsellers Blink and The Tipping Point. And we're talking to him about an article he has in the recent New Yorker called The Moral Hazard Myth, The Bad Idea Behind Our Failed Healthcare System. He joins us here from Air America Studios in New York.
Malcolm.
Yeah.
Okay. So moral hazard is basically the idea that if you're fully insured, you'll overuse insurance, and that's sort of the basis of it. There's another concept in here which is social insurance versus actuarial insurance. Can you explain those two concepts and how they're in conflict with each other?
Yeah. The social insurance says that all of us share in the costs of our health care. So that someone who is 25 years old and perfectly healthy and never goes to the doctor pays a premium that is the same as someone who is, just got hit by a car or someone who's got Huntington's and is 70 years old and confined to a wheelchair, right? That we pool all our risks equally.
Right.
Actuarial insurance is another kind of insurance, and that's sort of the way you think about car insurance, right? Your car insurance varies dramatically depending on how old you are, your driving record, what kind of car you're driving, where you live.
Right.
We adjust your premium to reflect your own individual costs, risks. And the issue for health insurance is, which model do we want? Do we want social insurance or do we want actuarial insurance? Every country in the world that has universal health care has social insurance. They have universal health care, and part of that is that everybody chips in roughly equally for the costs of financing the system. Medicare is a social insurance system. If you are a perfectly healthy 66-year-old person, you do not pay more for Medicare than someone who has got 17,000 things wrong with them and is in, a nursing home. But when it comes to the private health insurance market in this country, we have decided that what we really want to do is to go in the actuarial direction. And if you look at everything the Bush administration is proposing to do in order to, in their words, fix the health insurance problem, what they want to do is they want to move the bulk of us who are, not retirees and who have private health insurance towards a far more actuarial model so that you pay how much you pay in premiums every year for your health insurance much more closely reflects how much health care you actually use. I think that is an unbelievable mistake, and that is setting us up for incredible problems. Because what it says is if you have some genetic disposition towards some disease, or you get hit by a car, or you come down with cancer, we're going to make you pay for that.
Right.
Right? That's just wrong.
And talk about how it starts to separate stratify the population.
Yeah, because what will happen more and more and more is that people who are relatively healthy will gravitate towards healthcare plans that have you know, a very, very high deductible and very, very low premiums, and it just offers kind of basic coverage. And those who are sick are going to gravitate towards plans that are, that will cover their illness, and as a result will have much higher premiums. And what you'll get
is, or won't be able to.
Or won't be able to get coverage at all. So what you get is this kind of bifurcation of the healthcare market, with the sick paying more and more and the healthy paying less and less.
Okay, this is really corresponds very much to the same argument we had during the Social Security debate, which we won, I think. And it's basically saying either we're all in the same boat, we're a society where we share the risks, and we share the responsibilities, and we share the benefits of the society, or we're in a society where if you're lucky and you're healthy and you're then good for you, and you don't owe anything to the guy who's unlucky. And that's just stupid. And it's just stupid, and it's going to create all these kind of competition among private insurers to cherry pick people who are healthy. It'll eventually really get down to situations where if we can start telling people's genetic dispositions at birth, and this information is shared, it's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, the other thing about the social insurance model is that it's far more efficient, costs less. It's just cheaper to do it that way. That all of this kind of deciding what someone's risk is and treating them differently and designing a special plan costs enormous sums of money. And it is why we spend twice as much money on healthcare as any other country in the world, because we spend so much time, so much money and time on this kind of paperwork and administration.
That seems to be the proof in the pudding. I mean, in terms of you look, compare us to other industrial societies. What do these Bush people say when you bring that up to them, that that we pay twice as much and have worse outcomes? What do they say? That, oh, these other societies are more homogeneous. Do they say that? What do they say? What's the answer?
You know, it's a mystery to me.
Okay.
I don't know why they have – I don't know what they say. They say, well, you wouldn't actually – I mean, they exaggerate the extent to which the healthcare systems of other countries have problems. But the point, I mean, I'm a Canadian. The Canadian system is not perfect, but every problem the Canadian system has can be solved very simply just by putting more money into it. I mean, you can...
Yeah, but that doesn't, I mean...
Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, the
that's
system...
That's the worry that people have, is that this will cost more, and that maybe America is uniquely suited to this awful system that we have now.
I think we just kind of have stumbled into it, and so there's that people like people in the Bush administration are just coming up with rationalizations because they don't want to. There's something about the ideology of those in power right now that is resistant to this notion that we're all in it together. They really do want to think that everything ought to be calibrated on the individual level. They find it offensive that we would all pool our risk and pool our money and kind of share equally the burdens of paying for health care. I think there's no other way around it than that.
What's funny is the argument that they, I think, will have the most trouble with is the efficiency argument.
Yeah.
And if you look at the efficiency of Medicare or of the veterans' health care system, which is much, much more efficient, that's the argument. No, yeah. Malcolm, thank you very much. Malcolm.
Thanks a lot.
Gladwell, author of... one of the top bestsellers now, Blink, thank you. And also the New Yorker article, The Moral Hazard Myth, The Bad Idea Behind Our Failed Healthcare System. When we come up, I believe, I don't know, he's not here yet, but we
are you on about that psychic again?
Yeah, Acuro, the radio psychic who
Will be here, supposedly, on the Al Franken Show.